Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host,
Canis Albinus.
The premise here is that you're on the New World. So if you remember from the first intro movie, at the very end, the colony ship arrives on the new planet. You see it from orbit and the drop ships are falling. But you've established yourself. This small Arctic research base picks up a signal.
We have debated the nature of the object since planetfall. But it wasn't until it began to slow and change course that we were certain it was a ship. A ship from Earth, launched long after we thought it was impossible. Its course clear, and its arrival imminent. Celebrations swept the colony in anticipation of reunion with our brethren. As we watched its approach, we prepared for any eventuality.
Launch day of Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide. Our birthday, if you will.
Happy birthday to you.
Andrew came up with that one, folks. Isn't that...
Your...
Now, the wait is over.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 240th episode of Polycast. Woo! I'm Dan Q, and I'm joined by Imagine.
One crazy Canadian, two crazy Canadian, three crazy Canadian.
Wait, Candace wait. Albinus.
Come I'm on. Not Canadian, but I am told that I could be one if I tried.
Oh, there's the Mackie.
Yeah, sorry. Skype has developed this thing where when I first started up, it has what it considers too many messages. It likes to crash.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I mean, that should be expected. You know, a lot of people do want to talk to the only woman on the internet. Ha! Okay.
Double face.
That's my quotient for those references for the next 5 or so minutes.
3 years.
It'd be nice if it was 3 years, but it really is only going to be about 5 minutes, knowing Dan.
I think what Mackie is saying is she would like Polycast to continue for at least 3 more years. Well, Mackie, I will see what we can do before we get to our rotational of guests, you know, other than Canis, who is set to be here for the entire episode as the replacement Phil. So there has to be a lot of trolling, a lot of cheesing.
I'm the fill-in for Phil.
Ha-ha!
You're filling fill-in? That's just... It's not even here.
I don't even know if he listens to post-produced episodes. I don't even know if Imagine listens to post-produced episodes of this show.
Once in a blue moon. You know, when I'm not actually on it.
To make sure we didn't say anything about you. I understand.
Or find out what you actually thought was funny.
Oh, what we thought was funny. Not necessarily that it was funny. Mm-hmm.
Expansion pack to Beyond Earth Rising Tide has been announced and has been released. Fanfare.
Woo!
October 9th, 2015.
Raising the States, a retrospective on the design and goals of Civ Burt. And I must say that I find the title a bit misleading.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with Civ Burt.
It had nothing to do with Civ Burt, except the fact that apparently Burt is, in fact, a civilization title. So once you get past that, there was some interesting elements in this panel for Phyraxicon 2015, led by Will Miller and David McDonough, co-lead designers on Civilization Beyond Earth and Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide. So there's the connection. Where essentially the first part of it was designing a game by committee, air quotes, with some people who were there at Phyraxicon, and they focused on essentially pre-Civ in a way, shall we say. But there were some interesting quotes that came out of it just from a general context.
I'm Will, this is Dave, and the topic of our talk here today is whose Civ is it anyway? This is going to be an interesting experiment and perhaps... an unmitigated disaster.
It'll be funny, though.
But it'll be funny.
It'll be very funny.
So you guys will have a good time regardless. Wanted to give you kind of a behind-the-scenes look at what our process is for designing a new Civ game. So we're going to do that on stage right now.
My favorite comment came from David McDonough, though, where he said,
Classic Civ is, as we like to say, the elementary school textbook version of history.
It's a textbook?
very layman's knowledge. Sid likes to use the phrase, do your history research after you make the game. And we take that very seriously. We want the game to reinforce the things that everybody already knows about and already thinks are cool, because that's why you think the game is cool. Like, the game never makes you feel dumb or makes you feel like you needed to learn more in order to appreciate it.
Well, you may need to learn more in order to be able to play it, but I think that only stands to reason that when you market something to someone, you want them to feel like it is cool to play, that there is something that they already know about it so they could see themselves playing it, but at the same time, it not being scripted in the sense that, well, I know how to play this, I know how this is going to go, I know exactly what I want to do and when I want to do it and how I'm going to do it. But other than the elementary school textbook comparison, I'm on board with this.
Jake Solomon, lead designer on XCOM. What do you think about when you think about exploration in Civ?
I think that's kind of the heart. For me, it's probably my favorite pillar because there's two sides to it. I think that as a player, there's something very, very powerful, both thematically and mechanically, pushing back the darkness, right? I mean, it is that sense of possibility that all of the fog of war represents, that as a player, being able to push that back is very exciting. And like that part never, ever, ever gets old, no matter how many thousands of games of Civs you play. And then I think the other aspect of that is that once you push back the darkness, it allows you to have both short-term decision-making. So as a player, you're like, which direction am I going? And then as you reveal something, you're like, oh, I'm going to follow this, or I'm going to dig into this natural feature. And then over a short period of time, you start building a medium and then long-term strategy when you're like, oh, man, I got to build my next city here. Oh, man, I'm up against this civ over here. And the most part, to me, in strategy games is formulating a strategy, and then you get kicked off of your strategy that you formed and you develop a new one. But being able to form that strategy comes out of exploration.
Yes. Yes. I would agree with that.
Sure. If you don't explore, you get crap.
You don't get stuff and things. You don't find the shiny wonders.
We learned this at Civ Revolution. They had to put stuff on the map to make people go look for it.
Ooh. Is that really what you want to learn from Civ Rev?
No, that's one of the things they did.
I like to think a lot of that was actually more about the target audience. Okay, you probably are not playing Civ on a PC because you probably don't play PC games. So here's a reason why you want to go out and explore. Other than the fact that you want to find places to settle, you want to find where the AI is, or where other human players are if you're playing multiplayer. Because actually, when I think about Civ Rev, I think of it being more valuable as a multiplayer game than a single-player game. But well, anyway,
there really was no single-player. I mean, yeah, technically there was, but it was only useful as a multiplayer game. But that's fine. That was the whole point of it.
Dennis Shirk. Dennis is the franchise producer for Civ. Talk to us a little bit about your experience with Civilization in the context of combat and units.
This all comes down to adding a level of stress to the game. You've got this situation where you're exploring and you're expanding and exploiting, and there's nothing really to check that except maybe other decisions that the AI is making, the order in which they might be researching or building things. But there's nothing to stop you from just going to town and doing exactly what you want, when you want it, where you want it. And combat provides that wild card of sorts. They're the things that you can't necessarily plan for. It's that kind of pressure that without that, I don't think it's as compelling a game. Got to kind of prepare for that. It takes you out of your comfort zone in terms of doing exactly what you want to do, because the real world is full of surprises, and that's where this really shines.
Whoa. Did he just quote the real world? Oh. Scary.
He mentioned the great beyond.
He did.
We have a system that we like the sound of. We have a gameplay that we like the sound of. This is going to be fun for players to use. Gameplay came first, and now we're trying to make it work with the story.
I did like Will's comment about tech progression.
You made these decisions, these sort of high-level, long-term decisions, long-term investments mm-hmm. that guided your civilization, guided your culture through the game, and it's a great barometer for how well you're doing.
Yeah, that is true, because whatever victory condition you want to go for, you are going to need some kind of investment in technology, mm-hmm. and you want to be able to defend yourself in order to keep the territory or other shinies that you have. You're going to be needing to progress, at least relative to your opponents on the map, on the opponents that can reach you. And do damage to you. That is very true.
Affinity level's a nice marker for that, too.
Well, yes, since it's all tied to tech.
Yeah.
Mostly, but not exclusively.
Right.
Sufficiently. You can try and quest your way through, but it's not going to get you much.
Well, if you go the wrong way in the tech tree and you just kind of spread everything out and then you have, like, all your affinity levels are 5 or something like that, that's not as powerful as somebody who's gotten one up into the teens.
I don't know. 555 actually gives you so much health, you don't need virtues for health.
Well, I was thinking on a pure military level there. Sorry.
Yeah, well, of course.
Thinking, how fast can I blow up the other players?
But if you go 666, you can blow them up much faster.
Ah, see, I was trying to avoid that number set, and there you go.
Actually, 6-6 gives you overpowered patrol boats versus somebody who's silly enough to try and get to 10, because it's way faster to hybrid.
We're going to ask Anton Stranger, designer extraordinaire on Civilization V's expansions and Beyond Earth, to join us.
I think technology and culture are kind of like the most closely linked pillar to the myth of the game. And Civ is always this really nice balance of parts that are procedural and random and different every time, and the player tells their own story. And there are other parts where there's similar things every time, and you can kind of rely on a sort of common thread underneath all of your playthroughs. And I think technology and culture are that second thing. They define what is possible and when it is possible.
Yes, I will agree with that as well.
Basically.
How boring. How boring. There's no controversy in that statement. Boo. Ugh. I was just trying to get kind of the general points, kind of general takeaway from the actual panel itself. And yes, there were multiple other panels from Phyrexicon, but we will get to those in a future episode. And I guess, honestly, some of the other set topics that we have are going to probably come up as a result of having our guests on. So we are going to get a hold of our first scheduled guest. Hello, one crazy Canadia.
Hello.
First important question. Do you have the Rising Tide expansion for Civilization Beyond Earth?
Yes, I do.
What are your first impressions? Both good, bad, and indifferent. They're OCC. Ha! OCC.
Good. This was the type of immersive game I was hoping for when it was released. I guess having leaders with their own dialogue, a whole different mechanic. Not like Infinities, but Diplomatic Capital makes it really different from Civ 5 in its own way, I feel. I guess the bad part is how diplomacy is, though new, it is now not completely functional in the way everyone's used to in Civ 5. Let's see. I'm winning a war score, and the only way I can get peace is if they offer me every single city but their capital. Doesn't seem to work that often.
Mm-hmm.
Indifferent. I'm not sure. I like the idea of the hybrid units, but I feel like they add a nice touch in how they each have a different ability, but they're not placed in the tech web in the sense that why don't I just rush for like level 6 affinity so that I can upgrade my Marines to one of the affinity units to make it really strong.
Mm-hmm. 666. Get everything. Six, six,
six. Yeah, that's all you need is if you hit 6 affinity compared to going for like 3 purity and 3 harmony and getting the immortal, I think 6 affinity is closer to a victory condition compared to 3 and 3, unless you're doing a contact style. Let's see, aquatic cities are a new addition. I like the fact that it adds a whole varied gameplay, but I've had to change my settings to a small map with adding AI compared to a standard map with 8 AI, just because it seems the water adds so much more room. The first game I played, I had like 7 cities before my borders even considered touching another AI. And by then I was fully sufficient to just run a simple victory and not have any war problems with anyone.
Yeah, there's room for improvement.
Oh, yeah. But I see the direction they're going and I like it so far. I had one game I'm playing now. The first few games I just tried to play water cities to see how it worked. And this one I was playing more land. And I built a navy anyways. And I had 3 AI declare war on me from one direction. And I held them off, but because all their water...
One Direction declared war on you?
You know what? I was thinking it too, but...
when did they show up in the game?
Maybe they were controlling the 3 AI on the same front.
What are you talking about? They're the Scarab Beetles.
Though I defended against the 3 AI attacking me, I noticed that their aquatic cities were like only 10 strength. So though I had a lower... Affinity army, I just built a few boats and I conquered like 6 cities total, so it just seemed to...
I've done the same thing.
Crank through the hybrids, well from there.
Mm-hmm. I know like fixing diplomacy so you can maybe possibly get energy per turn or flat energy or science per turn or a flat amount of diplomatic capital might definitely improve negotiating.
So with regards to Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, would you say that as it stands right now, would it be enough to say to a Civilization fan who does not have Beyond Earth, get Beyond Earth now with Rising Tide? Or would you say it's more, no, if you already have Beyond Earth, then you should go out and get Rising Tide?
If you were looking for a lot more immersion in terms of Beyond Earth when it originally came out, but you didn't get it, then you should buy Rising Tide because it's a different experience. If you have Beyond Earth already, and if you enjoy the Civ franchise in general, you should grab it. But if you're looking for something that's like a solid, complete game, you might be waiting for a patch or two.
And of course, there's already comparisons to Gods and Kings for Civilization V and comments being made that, oh, probably patches are not quite enough to address issues that have not already been looked after in terms of what was in Beyond Earth or issues that arise with Rising Tide. Would you say that that is a fair comparison based on your play so far?
I think it's also similar to Warlords as well from Civ 4, in the sense it seems like the first expansion always adds a couple of new things that are very like great ideas and fun to play, but they're not truly realized or fleshed out to their full potential, and they don't necessarily solve other core problems that the game might have.
So yes and no.
Yes.
And I guess actually one more question that I have for you, and maybe some of the other panelists have a question as well. No, you also have Civilization V, including both of the expansion packs. Is there enough in Rising Tide right now that you would prefer to continue to play it as compared to going back to Civ V? Would you still play Civ V, or could you even see yourself playing Rising Tide as well as Civ V? Not at the same time, if you know what I mean, but in other words, is there enough to keep you playing right now as opposed to going back to something else instead of waiting for a patch or two?
Yes, but how long is another question?
So it'll depend on what is patched and when to see how much longer you are going to continue to play Rising Tide, perhaps before going to another Civ title or another game altogether?
Thing about Civ V is that it's a well-fleshed-out game, and Rising Tide still has a few similar problems. But I enjoy it right now, and I'll probably play it for a while still.
Well, thank you very much, One Crazy Canadia, for coming on. You were a guest on episode 226 here in Season 9, and we look forward to having you back on the show again in the future.
Anytime, guys. Thank you.
All right, it is time for our next guest on the rotational. Hey, it is ZT Zarish. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Was it long ago that you were on this show for the first time, episode 237, also here in Season 9. So, do you have Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide?
That is correct. I've been playing it a little bit.
From your play, what are your first impressions?
Oh, there's a lot more to do late game. Diplomacy, although it's a little bit more fleshed out, it's a little bit more rigid as well. It still is going to take a little bit more time to get it perfect. But yeah, it's definitely a good step forward.
Okay. Would you say that as it stands right now, is Rising Tide of interest to just those who have Civilization Beyond Earth? Or as it stands right now, would it be enough, would you say, for someone who enjoys the Civilization franchise in general and has maybe held off on getting Beyond Earth, that yes, now is the time to dive in?
Yeah, I'd say yes to both of those questions. It's definitely good enough. Definitely. I mean, anybody who has Beyond Earth wants Rising Tide. It's just too much of an improvement to pass out on. And people who would like Civ 5 or the other ones, I'm pretty sure would like this one as well. There's a lot to do. It's not perfect, but it's a good game.
So you're prepared to continue to play it while we wait for subsequent patches, because Firaxis has said that there will be patches. But you say right now that, yes, you will continue to play it. You're not prepared to say, I'm just going to go back to Civ 5 or whatever and wait for a patch to play it anymore?
No, it's good enough. I mean, there's a lot to do with the hybrid affinities and such to kind of like mess around and see different things and different builds. And yeah, there's enough to do, definitely. It's more entertaining, for sure. So I'd say I'll keep playing, definitely.
And do you have any memorable moments so far from your short time playing it that you would like to share? Either something good, something bad, something what the?
I think one of my favorite things that I didn't realize would be fun with tweets. I mean, I saw that and I was like, wow, that's so silly. That's going to be stupid. And then I actually had it in game, and it was just made the game, it made the game a lot more fun because you felt almost taunted as you played. And I remember one of the things that they actually did was they kept calling me a pacifist as I was like amassing an army on somebody's border. I was like, all right, you're next. Keep saying pacifists. You're just adding yourself to my list. So yeah, that was one of my memorable moments. I think it was Hutama saying that.
I do like the term for the communiques, as they are officially referred to in Rising Tide, being referred to as tweets from the leaders, because sometimes it's like, I really didn't need that stream of consciousness from you, to, hey, that stream of consciousness is actually quite humorous and informative.
Yeah, kind of more immersion, and you feel like they're actively watching you feel like they're actually paying attention to what you're doing.
Yeah.
Equal parts creepy.
Plus, you can always find out how to actually play nice with them. They will like some things and not like other things.
Yep, that's awesome. I love that. I agree with that. It makes it seem like some of them have a, like, unhealthy obsession. Because I remember Samatar was always like messaging me about my orbital coverage. I'm like, you need to like calm down, man. It's just satellites. Like, I know you're really excited about this. Relax, buddy.
He's a satellite enthusiast.
He is.
The junkie.
Yeah, it always gets to the point where you're like, that's unhealthy, man. You should probably see somebody for that. Like every other turn. It's funny.
And why are you so worried about my miasma, Hutama? I mean, seriously.
I think he is seeing someone. He's seeing you. You're becoming his therapist. Him to vent all his concerns, even if they are about you. It's kind of awkward, but I would say for me, from the communiques that surprised me the most was, wow, I declared war on somebody else, and this other AI is actually encouraging me. They're actually happy that I'm doing that.
Oh, I've gotten a couple of those in the game I'm working on.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They deserve that. It's like, wow.
Oh, well then, okay.
Okay, I'll keep on. I mean, granted, I'm coming after you right after I finish with them, but okay.
Yeah, whatever.
Although I would still say with the communique, it's humorous when you're at war and they're still willing to contact you. I wish I could, like, block user.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I don't need to see your tweets about this war.
Yeah, or even it's just like, oh, we're at war, but your land improvements are pretty crap.
Yeah, there should be a way to...
I have a small decrease in respect for you. I'm not sure and worried about respect right now.
You just took my city. You're a horrible, horrible person.
Yeah, and stop declaring war on me.
You started it.
One thing would be nice if they put like a little number up there so you can see like what it sits at now, because I can't keep track of those, like all those different numbers. I'm like, I don't know what it's at. It went up. I don't care.
You just jump into the Diplo screen if you really want to know that.
Exactly, yeah. So I was like, I wish they kind of showed it there, like, oh, it was 4, now it's 5. And you're like, okay, I don't have to go to the Diplo screen. I can kind of know. I would like that. I think that would be a nice little addition.
That would mostly defeat the purpose of the Diplo screen, though.
Yeah, kind of. That's true.
I think maybe it's a measure to try to get us to pay attention to more of the qualitative comments of the message as opposed to the quantitative. Although I suppose if someone wanted to really see what was going on, you know, under the hood, as it were, with regards to the code, I wouldn't be surprised if there is a mod out there or there will be a mod out there that can say, hey, turn this, you know, user interface layer on and find out what that means mathematically in terms of the code.
Hmm.
But I don't think it's necessary to have, but it would be nice if it was an optional layer.
Yeah. It would be kind of nice to be able to, like, know what you're sitting at, because I just can't keep track of it. And I really, like, don't want to go to the Diplo screen if I don't have to. Like, it's okay, but, like, I'd rather just, like, see it and be like, oh, okay, I'm at a good number now. Because a lot of times you see the same one, and then you're like, I don't know if it's gone up 4 times or if it's gone up and down, or I don't know. But yeah, you can, as Majin said, you can't just go to the Diplo screen. I'm just lazy. I also noticed that a lot of the units, when I was playing Supremacy Purity, you can get, like, some of those hybrids, like the drone cage and such, and use them as kind of like a tier 1. And so I hadn't really thought about that before, and not, at least in Supremacy Purity you can do that, and I noticed that. So I feel like you can get access of, like, a full Supremacy Purity army earlier on than I had actually expected, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it just depends on the tech location of some of the hybrids. I don't like how some of them are just so far away to the point where it's like, well, by the time I actually realistically get to that tech, it's going to be full tier. It's already going to be upgraded.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's a bit annoying.
Yeah, I like the marvels and such, and there's a lot more things to do in terms of exploring, so that's really fun. Like, and that lasts for a while. You get so many rewards out of it. It's insane. Exploring's more fun, definitely.
Well, thank you very much, CT Zarsh, for coming back on and talking to us about your first impressions of Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide. We'll see you on another episode at some point in the future, I'm sure.
I'd love to. Have a great day, guys.
But in terms of reviews, because so far, the couple of guests that we have had on, they have been generally favorable. And I think that describes most of the critic reviews of Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide as well.
It's averaged out to about 80, which is pretty decent.
Okay, yeah. But, I mean, if you're looking at Metacritic for that, Metacritic's garbage now.
Now, Dan gave us a link to GameRankings.com, which shows you some. So
yeah, GameRankings.com is consistent, as is the new OpenCritic as well. For critic reviews are hovering around 80%. The Metacritic also brings in user reviews, which it's of interest, but I don't think it's as of much interest just in the way in terms of how those reviews are counted. But if we look at that, then it's at about 60%.
Yeah.
Out of 50 users, as opposed to the 80% of 29 critics.
Yeah, so you have to get rid of the outliers first, like the one on Metacritic that gave it a zero for a user one. Like, okay, go away.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a review. But then again, you say the same thing for all the ones that gave it a 10. Like, you didn't even bother to look at it before you wrote a review. Is that it? Or you have no clue what's going on, and therefore you just gave it a high number. Is that it?
Or you got it for free.
Yeah, that too. Well, that's not always the case. But even if you look at the quick write-ups on Metacritic between the various actual quote-unquote critics, which at this point is pretty much anybody who has a blog can seemingly get in here. You get stuff like Gaming Trend that gave it a 95. Their quick write-up is, BERT is a well-developed, superbly balanced, and refined evolution of the original. That is so full of bleep. I'll bleep it first.
He'll bleep that for you.
Yeah, it's not.
Well,
it's not. Like, there's obviously broken stuff in the game, war score. It is not superbly balanced. The forums are like alight with all sorts of badly chosen ideas. And refined evolution? Not really refined. It is an evolution, but it's not really refined. There are some nice evolutionary points to it. So basically, they pulled some stuff from the press release and said, that's great. Whereas you go down to somebody who gave it a 70, which is actually the lowest Metacritic reviewer.
And that low end 70%, that's also consistent with what Game Rankings and OpenCritic is reporting.
Yeah.
Between 70 and 95%.
Yeah. BERT is an enjoyable expansion pack that offers numerous new features and improvements. However, it's not quite the leap forward that some Civilization fans are hoping for. Okay.
Oh, yeah. We got this covered. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's actually a lot more accurate. Or Hardcore Gamer, new content is not undeniably great. The new units add depth and strategy and take control of the aliens, gives a fresh way to play the game militarily, which is quite interesting. But they still give it a 70, which is actually kind of amusing.
Yeah, and the one just above that one where they're talking about, they say uselessness of hybrid affinities. And I don't know if I quite agree with that part, but I agree that sometimes within the aquatic cities, if you're not the NSA and you don't have that rudder, it can be a little tedious.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't think the hybrid affinities and their even the current design of it, they're not useless.
No.
I mean, yes, there's no victory condition for it, so some people are a little upset at that, but whatever. At least some of these are a little better, although that one also quotes the impressive price tag, i.e. this thing is way too expensive based on what you got for an expansion. And in some places, same cost as the base game, which just makes it really dumb.
This is why I love Green Man Gaming.
Yeah, that too.
I actually like what PC Games Germany.
Oh, yeah.
It says, good to see that Firaxis Games is following its tradition in optimizing core game features that could have worked out in a better way. So Beyond Earth's diplomacy is much more entertaining now. The aquatic gameplay and the hybrid affinities now offer much more strategical depth. The new artifact system is a lot of fun to experiment with, and there are many improvements in feature details. But still, it's not the same overall fantastic game experience that Civilization stands for. Even with the add-on improvements, Beyond Earth appears like a little sci-fi brother to Civ 5. And you get kind of a comparable comparison from multiplayer.it, which is like, better to wait for further expansions, unless you like loved Beyond Earth, basic Beyond Earth, and then in case which, go for it. Whereas Level Up also says, this is recommended for completionists more than for newcomers who should stick with Civilization V and its expansions, because Rising Tide is a quote-unquote mixed bag. It's an expansion that fails to meet the standards of its classic counterpart, but adds much-needed improvements to water combat and diplomacy.
Mm-hmm. Actually, the Escapist kind of hits it on the head for some stuff. To use the Civ 5 metaphor, this is Beyond Earth, Gods and Kings. And that's actually something that's shown up on the forums as well. People have asked, or even on my YouTube channel, is this better than Civ 5 Brave New World? And it's like, no, if you're going to compare it to the first expansion, Gods and Kings. It adds a few new things, adjusts a few others, but overall doesn't really have much impact on the core game, which is mostly true except for the aquatic cities and some of the other stuff. The mechanics are still there, but it's sort of ironic that this expansion adds in aquatic combat since the thing it seems to lack most is depth. It's a coat of paint, not a deep fix. But they still give it an 80, so...
Hardcore Gamers Sean Hanley said, Civilization's anything can be traded, however unlikely diplomacy system was a key element of the game and seems to have been removed, and the War and Peace system is broken as it stands. Hopefully this will all be patched at some point, the way Beyond Earth had a significant patch history, as Rising Tide brings a number of positive changes to the table. Now, they gave that a 70%, but I do like that summary. Pretty compact. But I think it's balanced. It talks about the good and the bad and also needed next steps.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to review a game, A, play it. B, don't just say, oh my God, this is so awesome. You're not Will Miller, okay? He actually gets paid to say that. You, on the other hand, not so much. But also going like horribly negative is also not very worthwhile. Unless it really, really was crap. And I don't think it really was crap. The chat asks, what is Polycast score for Rising Tide? I would probably float it about 70, personally, just because there was new stuff added. Some of it was actually deep enough, like the artifact system and stuff. The new diplomacy system, I actually do like that style. I like the concept that they tried to get to. I don't like their implementation, and I include War Score peace deals as part of the diplomacy system. So they got most of the way there and then either ran out of time or whatever, but they really just need to finish it. And if they do finish it, it'll actually be way better than the previous diplomacy stuff. So yeah, there are some good things in there. There is some other stuff that they just didn't finish. And its game is still too easy on Apollo. They really have not gotten to that point where difficulty level actually matters.
For myself, I would give Rising Tide comparable to Imagine. I would give it a 75. I like the additions with regards to the flavor and the changes with regards to the diplomacy, but then at the same time, Imagine referred to, oh, the War Score mechanic, oh my gosh. That's that's probably the biggest hammer in terms of, yeah, I know there are lots of little things here and there, but I kind of can't even hear the noise of the little things, because a lot of the little things, I'm like, okay, that's a patch worthy, okay? But something more substantial, like the War Score, how that's handled, and also the underwhelmingness of aquatic cities for me. Those two things, which of course are push, 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 especially for the aquatic cities, as a major feature of the game. It's like, okay, you've taken a step forward because it's in the game, but how you've put it in the game, oh, it's a novelty thing as opposed to fundamentally changing the way I'm going to play, as compared to, say, the diplomacy. Yeah, there's that immersion there, but then I get sucked into that immersion, and as someone who is warring, that War Score thing, I kind of hit that wall where it's like, it's really, really good until it's not. I'm stuck. What am I supposed to do? So, yeah, a little bit of polish, that score could move up relatively easily.
Yeah, it's going to take more than lipstick.
Just a lipstick on a pig joke here.
Yeah.
I was about to say.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm where Dan is with the 75, because there are good things about this. It's got me to start playing it again and actually enjoying it, whereas for a while, I think the base game had gotten kind of too much of a slog. Every game felt like it was just the same, you know? And Dan, I think you would appreciate Aquatic Cities better if you played as NSA. I don't know if you have or not.
I haven't played as much with the NSA as I have played with the Chungsu, Alpha Law, and of course I have to go back to the American Reclamation Corporation because...
Hey, Texas. Well,
hey, at least all your comments aren't about Adam Smith anymore.
Yay!
Hey, there's a couple points expansioner.
Plus a dozen points for not mentioning Adam Smith.
Yeah. I mostly play them right now. I want to get the game I'm done finished so I can do a game with Alpha Law, because I want to see if they're as kind of overpowered as I think that's going to be. But by adding all the stuff to the ocean, it's added a lot of things to do in the game and things to the map. And I know some people aren't entirely sure about what you're supposed to do with all the new things like the coral and stuff. But yeah, 75. It can improve easily once they fix it. Oh, yeah, because, yeah, War Score. What was it in our multiplayer game the other day? I was fighting against somebody who had, like, 1,400-something War Score. I'm not giving you nothing. I'm not giving up. Blah, blah, blah. We're doing fine on our own. Okay, then.
Yeah. Your definition of fine is not really that good.
Yeah.
Yeah, just as a final point on War Score, then we'll go to Canis for his very brief percentage for Rising Tide, and then we've got some further guests to come on as well. It's kind of like, okay, so who put these terms on the table? Because I didn't put them on the table, and apparently the AI isn't willing to consider them either, and I can't change it. I don't want these cities. I want those cities. I want no cities. I want some beakers per turn. I want some energy per turn. I want something other than that. Or even, quite frankly, you know what? Let's just forget about this stalemate. You kill a unit, I kill a unit. Let's just have absolute white peace. I don't want this, even though my war score is perhaps substantially more than you. And it's just like, ah, it's so heavy-handed. Candace.
Briefly, I'm going to say I don't have a percentage. I have a respect and a fear score. I give it okay. A 7 out of 9 respect and a 4 out of 9 fear. Because okay. It's a little bit too easy on the harder difficulties, and it's very much fun, and it just has a few problems that can be fixed fairly easily, I think. A couple things might be a little harder, but I think it's definitely a major improvement.
on the fear ranking, does that mean 9 out of 9 would be, I fear that I like this game, or I fear that I hate?
I fear that I can't win it.
Ah.
But it's
only if it's 9 out of 9. He's at 4 out of 9, so it's all good.
And by not winning it, you mean by any possible victory condition, is that right?
Well, I can win by any possible victory condition up to about Gemini. But that's only because I don't concentrate when I play. I play mostly for relaxation.
We are now going to bring on our next guest, past guest on this show, has a first name that I absolutely love for some reason. It's Daniel Cole, who has been a guest previously during seasons 3, 4, and most recently on season 8. Hello, Mr. Cole.
Hello, hello.
First impressions.
I will start by saying this is not Alpha Centauri 2 for those that were hoping. Probably all one of us left that were hoping they were going to make this Alpha Centauri 2. The immersion is much, much better, but anybody who's played Alpha Centauri 2 at all, if I say Zarkov, or if I say Lal, or if I talk about the American religious nutcase, you are going to know immediately what I'm talking about. Even the additions, they're just not real characters yet, which is fine, and it makes gameplay potentially better because you decide what your character is. I prefer the other. The whole idea of our players make the best stories, I think, is bullcrap. The new art is wonderful. The new aliens, especially, I don't think anybody's mentioned that yet, are actually scary. Part of that scale, the worms, I didn't think were large enough compared to normal units to be as scary as they should have been. I didn't get the sandworm from Dune vibe from them, really. I do from some of the other aliens. If you play NSA, you're probably overpowered. Anybody who watches recent Turncast, I die on Apollo in the first, 100 turns or something to the NSA. But make sure you build ships. Ships incredibly important, incredibly powerful.
Yeah, actually, that's kind of a springboard. Yeah, if you've got any kind of water on the map and there's any kind of cities that are on the coast or otherwise in the water. Navy, I find it's kind of one of those things where I'm not really so concerned about what my affinity is. I'm not really concerned about even hybrid affinities. It's, do I have affinity points so I can upgrade my naval units? Yes. Great. Let's go.
Yeah, because otherwise you will die. So maybe it's that I don't know how to play it. Maybe it's that I have too many other things I'm doing, but Apollo is certainly hard enough for me now. Other people might have different opinions. So it's certainly not Alpha Centauri 2 yet. It's certainly not as good as I would like. Like others have said, War Score is terrible. I liked the other system better. I like being able to negotiate. I was never one of the people that thought this was just a whitewash of Civ 5 and that it needed to be somehow different. The fact that it's science fiction makes it different. I do have to disagree that I miss Ark talking about Adam Smith all the time, because that actually gave her a character. Ark was one of the two Beyond Earth characters that were actual characters, that were actual, you know, people that if I say Ark, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I mean, they have personality now still. It's just different that she's not quoting Adam Smith all the time. Is that fair?
I think she has less personality, and I think since you get to choose the traits and the personality is different game to game, that I would disagree with that statement. One of the things in Alpha Centauri that I actually really enjoyed is that each faction had positives, but it also had negatives. If you played the capitalist faction, you could only choose capitalism. If you chose Lao, you could only choose democracy. Those, I think, those worked because it gave them character. It gave the game character. But I like RPGs almost as much as I like strategy games, and Alpha Centauri was a mix with a strategy game and an RPG. So
we know that each one of the factions has a particular trait that they cannot change. It's their default one.
Right.
And then they have the choice with regards to the other ones from domestic and political and military.
Right.
I could certainly see a faction having a particular bias towards one where all things are created equal. And for myself personally, I like the fact that they could deviate because then they respond to the in-game conditions, whether it's map-based, AI-based, victory condition-based, affinity-based, that it gives them that bit more versatility as opposed to being able to say in the first few turns, oh, look who's here and look what's going on in Situation X. We know that they're going to want to go in this direction, so they're already going to essentially screw themselves over because that's the way they always go.
that would be true since these aren't really based on philosophy. But if you have a certain philosophy, you should kind of stick with it regardless. You know, if you are a capitalist, you're a capitalist all the time, always. That was what I liked about Alpha Centauri. But I'm an armchair philosopher as opposed to an armchair historian. And that was the joke, that Alpha Centauri is for philosophers and Civ is for historians.
Well, when it comes to the humor, I mean, Beyond Earth Rising Tide has puns in it. And I mean, that's just automatic.
I agree. I mean, the tweets, as somebody else called them, are wonderful and actually add character. I like that. I like the new systems as systems. The artifacts are hilarious. I love finding a copy of a coffee maker and ripping it apart and getting culture from it. I find that funny.
Or a copy of Half-Life 3.
Yes, I love that one. I haven't gotten that one, but I love hearing about it. That's funny. The diplomatic capital seems kind of stripped from Endless Legend, which I kind of still think Endless Legend is a better game. But it works. I enjoy it. Some of the agreements I don't think I will ever use. Could be wrong, but there are just so many, and I think some of them are not useful for the way I play, but that's fine.
And there's some that when the AI come to ask you for them, you're like, there is no way I am giving you that. That is way too powerful.
Right. You would have to give me more diplomatic capital than you have for me to say, oh, I will give you a city, and it immediately becomes a city and doesn't go through being an outpost.
Oh, yeah, the outpost. Yeah, no way.
Please do forward settle me constantly.
Yeah.
At least in those situations where I'm like, oh, yeah, hell no, I'm not going to be giving you that. But I'm going to make a note to ask for that if I'm in your situation in the future. If I'm playing your faction and you're the other faction, yes, I would love that. Even when I'm annoyed in that situation like that, it's kind of tempered with when I tell them no. There's often like a humorous or tongue-in-cheek response. Like Utama's like, oh, playing hard to get, are we? Or that's rude or some, or, you know, or some such.
Yeah.
I think with regards to agreements, the fact that you are limited to 5, you know, you mentioned that there are some agreements that are not useful for your playstyle. And I think that's important that there are those that you recognize that's not going to be useful for me. But as long as we can say it is going to be useful for someone, at least some of the time, that it's something that's practical and it's going to come up at least more than once in a blue moon, then it's worth having there as an option. You got to be selective.
Right. I agree. I like options. I like complication. So I'd find I like having more than less. I just wish there was more character to the agreements. I don't know. The affinities still seem like to me just a coat of paint rather than a change in philosophy. And it still doesn't feel like, well, you're going supremacy, I'm going harmony. We shouldn't really want to kill each other. Where in Alpha Centauri, if you were going one direction, I was going another, we would want to kill each other because those directions were mutually opposed. I don't feel that way in Beyond Earth yet. But I want them to write the story. I don't want to write the story myself. Call me lazy or whatever. But I think it's worth getting, especially if you like science fiction. Now, this is for people who don't have Beyond Earth at all. If you like science fiction, I'd go ahead and get it now. It's definitely improved. It's much more immersive. But I played it because I like science fiction so much, even before the patch, more than I played Civ 5. I got bored with Civ 5, so I played the original more than I played Civ 5. So I may not be the best person to make that statement. I give it an 80 because I like the new immersion a whole lot. Some things are terrible. They should get rid of War Score entirely and go back to the old system. Some things, I haven't played enough with Sea Cities to know whether I like them or not yet. They're too easy to take over, I think. Something a couple people have already said. The AI does not build enough of a navy to protect them. What else? Oh, I like the... Nobody else is going to mention this because nobody else cares, but I like the new moving picture endings. I found those very good. Even when you die, which I can now say since I died to the NSA, you get a nice, cool one. So that's a nice addition. Thank you for that.
So I think they took the quote-unquote moving picture side a little too literal. Movies are moving pictures, but when you call it a movie, I think most people expect an actual
No, that's why I said moving pictures and not movies. They're not movies. They're still not as good as the Alpha Centauri Wonder videos. I understand you don't want to put a lot of thing into that because people are then just going to immediately put it on YouTube, yada, yada, yada. Well, fight them then. You have copyright. You can make them take it down.
Says the copyright and patent lawyer.
Says the patent lawyer. Yes.
Daniel, thank you very much for being on episode 240 of Polycast. I take it it's safe to say that you are going to continue to play Rising Tide as we await future patches.
Yep. I won't be going back to Civ 5 or something.
We're now going to bring on another past guest, and we are generally going from less senior recurring guests to more senior recurring guests, as in either the first time they were on the show was longer ago than otherwise, or just simply the number of return appearances. The person we have now has been a guest most recently in episode 239, the most previous episode, what do you know, but was also in three times in season 8. It is Darkest Onion.
Hello, folks. Daniel Cole has said most of the things that I would say, actually. He's a very sharp customer when it comes to this kind of thing, probably because we play together and complain at each other about the game. I would start with saying that I probably give it an 8 out of 10, but to be fair, I'm a little biased towards Civ games because I played back in the Civ 2 days, and I actually like, what was it called? I'm thinking Rising Tide so much now, that offshoot that everyone hates. What was that called, Dan?
The Call to Power series from Activision?
There we go, Call to Power. But that was because it went science fiction. But as far as like good, bad, and ugly, I would say the best thing about Rising Tide, Bert, is that the art is incredible. Like if you just like pretty picture stuff and you like the good, you know, just like a really pretty game to play, then it's an obvious yes. The mechanics are mostly innovative, but perhaps not as innovative as they could be. War score, like you guys have said from repeated guests, I'd like a little more control over how my peace terms go, or maybe just not have the AI say I can either wait for them to offer me diplomatic capital or offer to spend mine with them. There's no option to say, I would like to offer you diplomatic capital. What would you like? For me, it takes away the agency almost that I'm used to. Like I can no longer set up proxy wars, see somebody masking my borders and send them off to somebody else so I can have a nice quiet building game.
Still potential for stuff like that, but that has to just get integrated into the new system. But the whole trade all your stuff for whatever, that got turfed because it was just dumb. Some people liked it, but it was not really useful long-term in the gameplay.
Yeah, but with their aesthetics, I really was a little disappointed with the phrase Wonder Movies. I saw from one of the developers, like, well, I'm sorry, we probably shouldn't have called them movies.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you probably shouldn't have, because you had me really happy.
Ruben Datalinks in the chat asks, is your 8 out of 10 based on the current state of the expansion or the potential once any major issues are fixed?
Oh, more the potential because it's closer to 7 of 10 if I'm looking at if it never changed from here. I'm on
yeah,
the
that
fence
would be a bad
little.
Idea if they never change.
Yeah. I've seen a trend in some games, let's call it streamlining. That's what I'm going to be nice today and say. And streamlining is great to get new fans in. And I'll admit it, I don't like it, but it's what it does. But too much streamlining makes an old school fan like me feel like there's other games I could be playing. And I play a lot of Civ and a lot of Beyond Earth. So I'd hate for it to get so simple that they take the choice away from the players. Which is kind of weird because you look at the diplomacy system and it takes that some of those options away, but then it gives you all those agreements, which is an incredible amount of choice. I also wonder if maybe they're overwhelming players with all the number of agreement choices. I think, was it Cole that was saying, you don't know if your playstyle is going to fit 10% of those things. But it's also good to have that for everybody who wants to do different stuff, right?
Yeah, and I guess the important thing with that is even if you're not certain about an agreement, either the terms of it or I would really like that agreement, but I don't want to get that closer to you, AI, at least not right now, is you can up and cancel them. I mean, yeah, there's going to be a diplomacy hit potentially if you do that. But of course, when you enter in agreements as well, there can also be a diplomacy hit with the other AIs. It's like, yep. You shouldn't trust those people.
Right.
So it's kind of one of those, on balance, I don't know, if an AI is really keen for an agreement, as soon as they meet you, I would say, take a step back. Maybe in a turn or two, you could propose it yourself. It is possible that they'll say no, but if it kind of takes you off guard, I wouldn't say instantly go yes, unless you know that what they're offering you is going to give you a very immediate benefit in exchange for what you're giving up, because then you could be like, oh, well, if that person is upset that I entered that agreement, I'll just go and squish you now with the thanks towards the agreement that I just got.
Right.
This other person.
Well, speaking of enemy tweets, it always makes me laugh because let's say I go to a war with somebody. Another player will be like, well, that's great. Awesome. Don't trust them. Then later I'll do some kind of peace because I don't really feel like continuing the war for whatever reason. And like, you know, you really shouldn't trust him. I lose the respect fear thing.
It's always respect. Fear is not based on diplomacy at all. Fear is literally how many units do you have versus them.
Outnumber them and scare them.
And it has nothing to do with whether or not you beat them up in a war.
Yeah, because it looks at your total number of units as opposed to, say, the distribution of those units, where those units are.
Oh, so definitely like, notice when my navy is on their borders.
made me giggle is that an enemy will say, I don't have a good enough army. I'll build one boat. And then the next turn, they'll be like, your army is amazing.
Yeah, there is a bit of that.
I got a tweet out of Lena Ever the other day that was like, oh, that's an amazingly well-balanced army. You're not going to use it on a little old me, are you? That's literally what she said. Little old me.
That's what I'm thinking of. But it adds a lot of personality, I agree, though. We can simulate that.
When it looks at also the number of units as well, it kind of could be, yeah, I don't have as many units you do, but how far am I down this affinity path as compared to you?
Yeah.
How strong are those units? Oh, wait. And then you actually take out a unit, and of course it's first like, oh, this will not be the end of my resistance.
Right.
And then maybe in the next turn it's, wow, your army is so powerful.
Right.
I haven't actually done anything more since the last turn, but maybe you're just now realizing that it would almost kind of be humorous if it would be in there. It's like, oh, made a mistake. I was wrong. Your army is actually...
Well, that reminds me of playing Ark the other day. Somebody declared war on me. And I'm like, oh, well, let's see what happens. I roll over my third upgraded kind of stuff, three little chevrons on them. They didn't have a chevron. They're using base units. I'm like, that was dumb. I don't know how the AI figured that out. It was like swatting flies. I think the AI should like look at your arm and go, whoops, no. Not declare war on you as far as your composition.
It might be that they aren't fully realizing affinity levels or potential affinity levels.
They kind of start to realize it a little more maybe after you actually do something with them. Whereas beforehand, it's like, I'm not afraid. Go ahead and try something. Okay.
Goodbye.
And then you get to the war score and it's like, okay, so you recognize that you're fearful of me. Let's get peace. No! What? Of course, the best with the AI is like they contact you. Oh, we really should get peace here. Let's end this. Okay. No!
Yeah.
Oh, really? I mean, this is bad enough when you either ask, can we get this agreement? I haven't actually seen a situation where the AI offers you an agreement and you say accept and then say no. But as this come up, it's like, your respect is really high for me. We might even be at cooperative, possibly even allied.
Oh,
let's have this trade. Not a chance.
Speaking of allied and let's cooperative, something I don't know if it's been mentioned yet. I didn't catch on to the stream earlier. This open borders happens naturally when you choose to go a certain direction and you happen to declare war on other people because you happen to be allied has caused me no end of frustration. I want control over my open borders and whether it's a military alliance or diplomatic.
Don't be friendly with anybody.
Well, that's been the solution, actually, sadly. But
yeah.
That got changed so that when you start cooperating – you open your borders.
Well, open borders is only a problem for two reasons. One, people running through and settling behind me. An ally, of course, so I can't really go after them if I still want to have an ally. Or the AI does weird things. They're not in a war, but they're going to move their entire army in the middle of your fight. They're not going to help, mind you. They're just going to take up space.
I had that once. NSA is an ally, and so they had a bunch of troll boats just zipping around, fully upgraded. A nest pops up near me. And a sea dragon just wanders into my territory. And then just all of a sudden, this giant wave of freaking NSA patrol boat shows up in my lands. I'm like, oh, you're about to cause trouble. That's probably not very healthy. Nope, not that. Fully surrounded the sea dragon.
Me too.
Didn't attack it. Just complete surround of the sea dragon. It's like, you can't go anywhere. Stay here.
Well, I actually had the AI or the NSA run in and take a city I was conquering. Because I miscalculated my assault. And like, I'll just run my boat in. We're at war with them, too. I'm like,
that just made me think of in situations of Civ 5. Thanks, city-state.
Yep.
I wanted that. But I would say, though, that if you are allied with someone and then they use that opportunity to get the open borders and then, you know, settle behind you, as it were, maybe they're air quotes ally and not really ally. And perhaps that's a good sign that, you know what? I made a mistake. You suck.
Casus belli time.
quite possibly. So, final question to you here, Dio, because we have some more guests to get to. So there is definitely enough that you would say in Rising Tide right now that you are going to continue to play as we wait for a patch or two or more.
Yeah, and I'd recommend people buy it if they already have the base game.
Or just get it for free.
Well, there's that too.
people
listening now.
Thanks, Dio, and I look forward to having you back on again in the future.
Catch you next time.
We We are now going to go to another returning guest co-host, first on in Season 7, Season 8, but also on Season 9, it is someone who is very keen to come onto the show and was actually on the call before we started the live stream. It is Fuzzy Fractal 42. Andrew, hello.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
How you doing?
I knew someone was going to do that. How you doing?
Oh, and I'm sorry. I did not give the proper hello and salutation to Fuzzy.
Hello!
Almost missed an opportunity there. So, Fuzzy, do you have Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide?
Indeed I do, yes. Yes, I do.
First impressions, good, bad, and different?
I feel pretty positive about it, actually. For starters, I really appreciated the overhaul they did on the visual elements of the game and a little bit of refinement. On balance to that, I feel like the UI is a little bit confusing at first, and I had trouble sort of figuring out where everything was. Once I got used to that, though, I kind of feel like, you know, they really give you a lot of ability to customize. There's a lot of, like, power behind the agreements, power behind your civilizations. The hybrid affinities really kind of open up a lot more choices. I also kind of feel like sometimes BERT gives you a little bit too much choice, and as a player who didn't play it for a year, pretty much a new player to the game, I kind of feel overwhelmed with the amount of buildings there are to build, the amount of text there are to research, and I guess I feel like more doesn't always mean better. I guess I just don't know the game well enough yet. I had a really good game playing as Polystrelia where I really pushed trade really hard, flowing in the energy. I found that the AI is actually pretty aggressive towards me, even though I was playing at normal difficulty level. They were pretty adamant about trying to declare war on me a lot. Maybe I wasn't using the diplomatic capital system to the best of my abilities, so they were maybe a little bit grumpy because I wasn't making as many deals with them as I could have.
Was it an actual hot war? Was there actual conflict? Or was it just mostly Cold War? Like maybe someone dragged them into it?
The first half of the game, it was mostly kind of Cold War situation. Then towards the end, it would be sort of this kind of like what we get in Civ 5 sometime, where you kind of get this cascade of Civ after Civ, like declaring war on you. And then you declare peace with one and then someone else does. And then you go back and forth and you kind of have a nonstop war going with somebody the whole time. Luckily, because I was playing on such a easy difficulty level, I was able to just fend off the AI units. And there was one point where they took a city from me for a couple turns. It was a water city. So I guess that happens sometimes. It's kind of just something that's a part of the game, is that those water cities are really vulnerable. I didn't try moving the city, which is something I really wanted to try to do, is move the city and figure out how to use that to a tactical advantage. But I'll have to try that next game. So in general, pretty positive about it. Probably a little bit more positive than most of the other guests on this podcast today, and maybe even most of the reviews for the game in general. I was pretty entertained in my first game, enough that I'll probably come back for more on it, and probably still play Civ 5, but yeah, I'm definitely ready to play more of the game.
Yeah, it's definitely not a choice of Civ 5 versus BERT. I mean, they are two different games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I mean, it's more about, okay, which one am I going to devote my limited time to play games? And I at least enjoyed that first game well enough that I did start a new one. You know, if I do have an opportunity to be on Turncast sometime, then, you know, definitely will consider playing Rising Tide with you guys. After playing Beyond Earth before the expansion, it was pretty clear pretty quickly that this wasn't something that was really fun. It wasn't really fleshed out as well as it could be. Was boring, and myself and many other people went right back to Civ 5 pretty much right away, within a month of Beyond Earth coming out. So definitely don't feel like that's what's going to happen this time.
Yeah, I think it's going to take a little longer this time, at least.
Mm-hmm, right.
It's on that front that I had in mind when I've been asking all of the guests that have been coming on this rotational today for this episode. Do you feel like you're now going to go back to Civilization 5 while we wait for a patch, or are you going to continue to play? As opposed to less it being about Civ BERT versus Civilization 5, but it was just a year ago that Beyond Earth came out, and yes, we've accumulated a number of more of hours in Civilization 5 since then, but fortunately, it's not, you know, quote-unquote that much more as compared to last year, yet there is this new Civ title, and in our gaming group for Turncast and other gaming circles as well, and people just stick to single player, they were going back to Civilization V because of the issues with it. Because as you said, Andrew, you've got limited gaming time because of this real life thing. Ugh, what a downer. And so you have to make kind of those choices. And then I will say, you talked about if you have an opportunity to be on Turncast again. Yeah, I've been meaning to talk to you about that. The expiry date on your card? For that, yeah. I mean, wait, no.
I'll have my people call your people. We'll talk. We'll work something out. We'll do lunch.
I like how we both have people. But they'll do lunch. We won't do lunch.
No. We're too busy for lunch.
We're too busy gaming. Eating. Yes. But Earl and Harewood in the chat tells you, Fuzzy, to embrace the confusion. This is how we all feel with every Civ game. Mm. So I guess my final question to you is that confusion, maybe you've kind of answered it already because you say you're going to continue to play this expansion while we wait for a patch, but was it more of an exciting confusion or a frustrating confusion? Because I think in the context, you could go either way.
A little bit of both. There were times where I felt one a little bit like, oh, cool, I have all these different things I can do. I have so many choices, and I can really dial in on what the strategy I want to do is based upon what tech I'm going to choose, and really spend a lot of time kind of poring over each item in the tech tree and really trying to be like, okay, what's the general flow here? Which direction should I be moving in generally? And then, like, which tech specifically should I be targeting in what order? I liked that choice in that respect. There were times where I was just like, oh, man, like, I had to walk away from the computer for a second. I was just like, I don't know what to do. I mean, they're all declaring war on me. I don't know what tech is going to help me here. I'm not even completely sure how to win the game necessarily, at least not how to do it efficiently. I'm just kind of like building, going through the Civpedia, trying to figure it out on the fly. So I guess I felt a little bit of frustration. It's like, what am I supposed to be doing here? What is my long-term goal? Which is honestly kind of my general problem with Civilization strategy and strategy games in general is like, okay, how do I get from A to B? How do I really get from what I have now to where I want to go? What's the most efficient path to get there? And without sort of getting sidetracked, I tend to get sidetracked a lot. And then, oh crap, you've gone out of your way to research this thing that you actually didn't need. And now you're behind in tech, or you don't have any money because you spent too much time building your military that you didn't end up using. I get a little bit tripped up with the long-term strategy behind games. So yeah, a little bit of both would be the answer to your question, I think. But more excitement. Unsure how to feel about the fact that I played on normal difficulty level and won the first game. I feel like if something's on normal difficulty level, you should probably not win your first game on that difficulty level, or at least it should be a really close call. And I felt like I pretty much crushed the AI, even though I didn't know what I was doing at all. I have no patience. And so for comparison's sake, I don't think I won my first Civ game on normal difficulty, whatever the equivalent was, for probably, you know, at least like a month or two after I started playing the game. Definitely feel like went into the game expecting to kind of lose, and sort of the opposite happened.
Well, two final comments to you here, Fuzzy, from me and then maybe from some of the people on the panel. First off, if you keep your expectations low and you're expecting to lose, that's a good way to go into it because then you will probably not be disappointed.
That's true.
And the other thing is, you talked about in your first game, you had to get up and walk away from the computer. You feel like you're going off on tangents and you're not exactly certain where to go. Just remember, Fuzzy, always go in one direction.
Well, I like what
Yeah,
no. I play Magic for this one, actually.
It's not my fault.
You're the first one that picked up on that. That is totally your fault.
Nope.
Yep, I don't blame you.
Fuzzy, you said earlier that you built a big army and didn't know what to do with it. Well, you kill your neighbor.
Right. But it was sort of like, oh, well, I'm friends with this neighbor and I'm trading with them heavily and they're giving me other benefits through the agreements. And
you're friends with benefits?
Mm-hmm. Indeed, yeah.
So here's what you do with the large army. You find out who your friends don't like and go kill them.
That's a good idea, yeah. Well, because I want purity and supremacy, I had pretty constant problems with aliens harassing me. So I had to keep some units pretty close to home until I got, like,
just to let you know, even if you go pure harmony, you're still going to have them all up in your thing because the ultrasonic fence has been changed a bit.
Just remember, Fuzzy, in the game, if the aliens are not in red, you're doing something wrong.
Well, you know, when you take certain things, they can be very valuable for science.
Delicious science.
And culture for sales.
Thanks, Fuzzy.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Mm-hmm. Look forward to having you back on the show in the future.
I will be there.
You'll be there. Okay. No. Oh, Mackie doesn't want you on the show, Fuzzy. Oh, sorry.
Okay. Not that. Dance singing, he knows.
I don't know what you could possibly be referring to, Mackie. You haven't been saying it for 9 years. Thanks, Fuzzy.
Yeah.
Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.
Yes, Mackie, you had a thought. Continue.
No, I was just saying Bright and Fuzzy.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just want some out of here.
Why do you guys always make me sound like I'm some mean person?
Because you are.
I'm not.
Mackie is nice. Be nice to Mackie.
Yes, Mackie says mean things nicely. This is true.
Yep.
What?
Pretty good at it.
You guys are nuts.
Yeah, I know.
She's so good at it. It sounds like she's actually being nice, but that's not how it goes. Twisting words. English language is fun. Fun with words. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Madden and Mackie. How you guys? And Candace, how you guys doing?
Speaking of fun with words, it's Scott.
Yeah, I was doing that. She's trying to say hi to Scott. Wait, what? Did I miss something?
Scott is the most frequent guest co-host on Polycast to date. Wow.
And you keep letting him do it.
I know. I know. Season 3, season 4, season 6, even says season 8 and season 9. I know. So now I already know the answer to this question, but we're asking all of the guests on the rotational saying it. Scott, do you have the Rising Tide expansion pack for Civilization Beyond Earth?
No, I don't. I don't. I really don't.
Now, no doubt our listeners are probably thinking...
Oh, no doubt. Seriously, you got to bring them in this?
What's wrong with that? Come on. No doubt.
I agree with what several people have said, that the tweets actually, or the communique tweets, whatever, do seem more immersive. It seems like you're actually communicating other AI. They're actually...
They seem less AI-ish and more like how real people would react, which is, I think, what he's going for there.
The ocean looks great. And I also saw for the Marvel that he found, which looked like this big transverse rex, like the bottom of the skull, like the bottom of the jawbone. But it's like 4 or 5 tiles. So that's great. It's like they've taken a next step from the natural wonders in Civ 5 and made it a bigger thing.
Have you been looking at what the community has been saying?
Yeah.
What's your pulse on what the community is saying in terms of their perspective on what's good, bad, and indifferent with regards to Rising Tide?
I think the thing that feels really disappointing is the ocean cities, because I was expecting this to hopefully bring a new dynamic to the game, and all I've been seeing is just people feeling kind of underwhelmed with it and not really impressed with what the cities can do. And
I have to repeat my earlier recommendation, play NSA or watch someone play NSA. There's a lot more you can do with that. They have a trait that's unique to them that is specifically about the water cities. Better defense and less hammers invested in trying to move it. So they can actually zip around pretty quickly.
It just seemed like there could be more in this expansion, but it does seem like it's getting better. Progress is being made. It just seems like a shame that it had to be an expansion pack to make it better, but at least it's getting better. So that is good. But, you know, I look forward to playing it eventually.
And all right, we'll cover it just on this episode, and we'll make a pact not to refer to it again, but we want to reflect what comes up again and again in the community. What is the feeling with regards to the community and the price point for this expansion pack?
Yeah.
Let's cover it once and never speak of it again.
Mm-hmm. Wait for it to go on sale.
Yep, there'll be a Steam sale eventually.
Well, thank you very much, Scott. We look forward to having you on again in the future.
Yes, I look forward to that. Thank you for having me on.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. To enter to win one of 5 Steam codes for Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, courtesy Firaxis Games, complete the following sentence at any time during the live stream and post in our YouTube chat. On my first turn in Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, I'd... The person that is going to get the first code is Earl Harewood, whose comment is, on my first turn in Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, I declare my civilization to be the new Atlantis and pass legislation to ensure that all future settlements built are floating on the water.
Pause.
Woo, Atlantis. Let's just hope that your civilization fares better than the fabled Atlantis.
Yes. None of that poxy land for you people.
Somebody accidentally sunk your city.
Whoops. You shouldn't have tried to do that with whatever technology you were playing with.
The second code goes to Luke Becker, who says, on my first turn in Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, I'll probably lose somehow. Oh my goodness sakes. And you know what? Why don't we give away a third Steam code as well, because we're crazy.
Don't do it, Dan. Don't do it.
I'm going to do it. The third Steam code is going to go to Wonkers the Watilla, who says, on my first turn in Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, I'd loot a pristine coffee maker from a resource pod sent ahead by Makalua.
You're welcome.
So the next code for Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, on my first turn in Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, I'd probably eventually hit next turn to Aaron Curse.
Well, we would hope.
The sentence to finish was, on my first turn in Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, I'd... This one goes to the person who answered, I'd make the first alien soup, and I will offer it to my enemies as a sign of peace. Wow. Congratulations, Phoenix Winged. So for all of our winners, that's Phoenix, that is Aaron, that is Luke, Wonk, and Earl. Of course, you can choose to either activate it yourself, attach it to your Steam account, or you could send it as a gift on to somebody else. The choice is entirely yours. And thanks again to Firaxis Games for making this giveaway possible.
Mm-hmm. Yay!
Well, thank you everyone for listening to episode 240 of Polycast. We hope you enjoy all this Beyond Earth Rising Tide codes. With me as usual, Dan Quick.
Squish!
Imagine.
Derp.
Yeah, derp. You did just derp. Do you need more coffee?
Yes. Yes, I do.
And stepping in for Phil, Canna Salvinus.
Stomp.
That's what Phil would do, so there you go. And also thank you to all of our guest co-hosts who chimed in. Because you're all off the call now, and you can say so. But thanks, guys.
Well, they could say something; it just wouldn't be picked up by the recording.
Yes, I mean. Yes, yes. Technicalities.
I know, lawyering to the end. I know. It's what I do.
No.
And has been
only
patched.
Call it Bert.
Civ Bert is also acceptable.
Yes.
No. That assumes it's actually similar to Civ.
Oh. I see. It's not actually Civ, it's Bert.
Yeah, Bert.
In Dawn of Civ, what is the myth? I kind of see two variations of this. I see Clan of the Cave Bear on one hand, and like Conan on the other hand. Like, where do we fall in this spectrum?
I like Conan.
What, are we just trying to make fodder and controversy? No, we
always
would never do such a thing.
Never, ever, ever.
It's like it's your job, Dan. You always make controversy.
No, I don't! You're wrong! How's that?
Case in point.
Deliberately approach our games with a very stupid perspective in order to make them as a pro... No. We, Prehistory should be a little bit of the myth and legend and a little bit of the reality. What are other aspects of this myth that you would put in a civilization game?
You can't have cities, can you?
Well, we're going to get to that. Right. So we'll get to growth and cities.
Creation of fire.
Creation of fire. Victory condition, done.
We're actually a little bit ahead in terms of our time, which is yay. So why don't we just take a few moments here and jump to the next... What?
Go do a commercial break.
We don't do commercial breaks in here. What?
Commercial break. Do you like Dramedies? Visit.
No. Dan will.
OneMoreTurn.net. If you realize that you've submitted something, oh, they chose a winner after mine. That means I'm not going to win. That is not true. That is not how that is happening.
It just means that you're not funny enough. And try again.
Wow, imagine.
This editorialization brought to you by
Montreal, Canada.
Just occurred to me that nobody might be able to read this except for us. Can anybody read this? Doesn't matter.
Well, it's for our own reference later. Don't worry about it.
I normally play a very builder-oriented game. That's how I play Civ. My favorite one is just going for the culture victory.
My favorite way to play is to conquer the person who's going for the culture victory.
I thought you were going to say, I enjoy constructing all these explorers because it's entertaining to see how quickly they'll die to the aliens. I was going to say, fuzzy. Cooperative status, and then you can go inside their territory, and it's like, oh, I see you haven't explored this expedition site, or my, of course, my personal favorite is approach device, and then you take it, and it's just like,
Yes, there's
thanks
a good
for the artifact, sucker.
Good satisfaction. Although I wish those tiles were workable in some way, like the alien structures, they were more in line with the natural wonders in Civ 5.
Yeah.
A question that constantly faces Civ designers is that you can't please everybody. And most of the time, you're not going to please anybody.
Right.
Just for reference, all of these ideas are property of Firaxis Games.
you will not go in the credits?
Just so everybody knows.
Oh, and Earl Harewood says in the chat, you are not alone. I will save singing Michael Jackson for another episode. We're already running long enough.
Oh, no. Well, I don't know. Thriller might be appropriate this time of year.
Always room for Thriller. I watched Imagine LP of, I forget which leader he was playing, but...
it was a memorable LP, yes.
It was so memorable. Thanks, Scott. Live less whatever.
That thing that is production that we call different things in different titles. How about that?
Mac's ringing endorsement of NSA.
Yeah, we've gone from shields to hammers to nuts, so.
Yep.
We always have nuts around here.
Yes, we do.
That leads to many, many very bad statements.
Right, yeah, here. I was thinking it too.
Yeah.
I haven't played the game enough to really see what the differences are yet. I mean, myself personally, you know, see what my play style is like.
Wow.
I've heard a few.
Wow, you haven't played the game enough yet. So Scott does have Rising Tide under a different Steam account. Interesting. Uh-huh. I'm going to call for that.
Oh, probably you guys.
Revealing your hands, Scott.
Lawyer Dan is lawyering.
Yeah. Lawyer Dan's out for it.
I would never.
I got this great sass from Elodie just now. She compared me to, how'd she put it, a certain Imperial Corsican who thought he could do things, and we know what happened to him, don't we? I was like, oh, really?
He died of lead poisoning on St. Helena?
Yeah, that's what she's implying, but she was dead a few turns later, so hey.
Oh, don't worry. Some of this, or, you know, 90% of this whole thing will be cut. The episode will be 5 minutes.
No.
Recorded October 17th, 2015. Firaxis Livestream Clips, copyright 2K Games. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth Sound Clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.